On today's Focus on the Family, we're going to hear about a very serious and tragic reality in our world today, and it's a very mature topic. I'm going to recommend that you direct the attention of young children elsewhere for the next 30 minutes.
So I went to sleep that night, and I told myself, no one ever has to know. I'm never telling anyone. This was such a shattering experience. It was so... to be that sheltered little girl and to have something like date rape, which that term in and of itself was foreign to me, it shattered everything that I knew to be true about the world I lived in.
John, that comment is so heartbreaking. And I do feel a sense of righteous anger over the fact that so many girls and women are victimized like that. The statistics are staggering. On average, a woman in America is raped every minute of every day. 1 in 6 women. Perhaps more. It's hard to find solid and consistent research, but they're all in this range. But 1 in 6 women will experience sexual assault sometime in their lifetime. That's 16% of women compared to 3% of men. These numbers are horrifying, but they don't reflect the devastation or grief and shame that victims face afterwards. As we're going to hear today, women often suffer years, even decades, from anxiety, fear, low self-esteem, and broken lives. And the Christian community especially needs to be aware of this evil in our culture and what we can do to help the victims to hopefully engage Christ, to find that healing for their soul, for their emotions, for their bodies. Today, we'll hear from two courageous women who were willing to share their stories with us. John, you met in the studio with them, and you had an incredible conversation.
It really was. I met with Leela Sommerfeld and Kathleen Terrell. Kathleen is who we heard from in the clip there at the beginning of the program. Today, Kathleen is the Director of Operations for Embrace Grace, which is a ministry that provides that kind of emotional and practical and spiritual help that you're talking about, Jim, for young women and their families who are facing an unplanned pregnancy. Leela is an author, a life coach, and a former lay counselor, and for many years she's led a seminar for victims of rape and assault, and she's written a book called Beyond Our Control, Restructuring Your Life After Sexual Assault. And we should mention, Jim, that Leela's rape occurred more than 50 years ago, and yet the trauma she experienced is still fresh, and she can still feel some of the emotions of that event. The good news, though, is that both women share how God intervened miraculously in their lives, bringing peace and hope and restoration and healing.
And that's why we need to address this difficult topic. Because no matter how awful your circumstances are, no matter how badly you've been hurt or violated by someone else, God cares for you in amazing ways, and at times you may not feel that. He does grieve over your pain, and He wants to gently restore your life. John, let's get to your conversation now with our guests on today's Focus on the Family.
Leela, let's start with you. Many, many years ago, an awful thing happened to you, and it just changed your life forever. Take us back to that time and tell us when that was and what the circumstances were and what happened.
Okay, well, the event happened the year that John F. Kennedy was killed. Mm-hmm. I remember that distinctly. And we lived way out in the country. We didn't have any neighbors. I could see some neighbors below us. There were canyons, but we couldn't talk. And so our house was pretty isolated. And a neighbor, I didn't know him, he was way far away, had broken into my home and raped me while my children were in the house just a few feet away in another bedroom. And both of the doors were open. And I was so fearful, I didn't resist because I was so fearful that they would be harmed or they would see what was happening. I knew what was going to happen. It put so much fear into me. I didn't want to be alone at night. And I always begged my husband to come home before it got dark. And I used to carry a gun with me when I go out to feed the horses. I mean, it, just how much it paralyzed me.
So you were in an isolated location.
Yes.
The rapist broke in the middle of the night. Your husband wasn't home?
He ironically had gone to Mexico with my father to pick up a car. My stepmother had died down there.
Yeah.
And so he wasn't expected to be back before midnight. And I don't know how this person knew that he wasn't coming back early. I have no idea.
But it was a nightmare that wouldn't...
He turned off the lights to the house, up there. They
cut the power?
Yes, he turned off the power, and he ran to the front door and the back door and banged very loud. I mean, very loud. I thought that was going to wake the children up. And we had dogs, and they were barking and barking, and then he came up from behind me and grabbed me and pushed me into the bedroom. And so I just didn't want my children to see or hear anything.
Yeah, in fact, I think in your book, Beyond Our Control, at one point you said you felt like a criminal than a victim.
Right. I felt like a criminal. And especially when I was asked for a polygraph. Of course, I understand they do that all the time. I didn't at the time. And I thought, gosh, how couldn't they tell by the way I looked and acted? But and of course, I passed it. But I did. And then it was just a really hard thing. And then when I first went to go before the judge, I was by myself. And I don't know why I didn't have my husband go with me.
Yeah, I was intrigued by that part of your story, that you grew up in a dysfunctional home and you had kind of always taken care of yourself.
Always taken care of myself.
Managed things.
And managed. My mom had a lot of serious mental illness. Mm-hmm. You know, she couldn't help it. And so I didn't have any close relatives. I didn't have anybody to talk to. My older sister was out of town.
And all of that led to you being in a courtroom by yourself?
Yes, coping by myself. Mm. And, you didn't want to go to your pastor, and you didn't want to tell everybody. For some reason, we just feel shamed or embarrassed.
Now, in your book, Lila, you described something that you call an alarm reaction state.
Well, you said
that affected you quite deeply.
Yes, we go into post-traumatic stress, and post-traumatic stress, you're constantly looking over your shoulder. You're jumping at things. Mm-hmm. And of course, you're very suspicious.
And this became not just a little episode, but it became kind of an umbrella for how you operated in life.
It took over my life. And for years, I would sleep with my gun by my bed, my car keys. I was determined to make a quick getaway, a quick getaway. And of course, now I know Jesus is there. But at the time, I was so traumatized, I couldn't even think about Jesus or God, or I just wanted that gun. When my husband was out of town one time, I slept at the front door with those things, the gun, the keys.
And this kind of PTSD effect on you and your emotional well-being and your physical health really took a toll on your marriage as well, didn't it?
It took a toll on my marriage. And at the time, I didn't realize, and in my book I say, I didn't realize my husband was going through this also in a different way.
Yeah,
he didn't know how
What were his reactions?
He tried to be loving, but he didn't know what to do with me. And I really, if that had happened today, I would have been in counseling, I would have been in support groups, I would have had a Christian support group. And I think I went to a psychiatrist once and I didn't talk about my rape.
Oh.
I talked about my father.
Oh, really? So there you are in the aftermath. You've got years of stress and hypervigilance and
panic attacks,
and you're finding nobody is able to help you.
There was nobody.
And your husband eventually left?
No, actually, I divorced him, and because I was so distraught, and my mind was so, I almost think I was crazy at the time, because I did end up checking myself into a mental hospital for 3 months. I couldn't cope, and I didn't know what to do. And of course, the enemy said, "Well, he's not helping you, so maybe you'd be better off without him."
So, what did you do after you left him then? I mean, did you try to find a place and settle down? Or?
I took the girls, got an apartment, tried to get a job and go to work, but I was in such severe depression, I couldn't work. I cried and cried and cried. I couldn't stop. Any woman that has had any kind of sexual assault. Mm-hmm. Because for one thing, when you go through trauma, it changes the wiring in your brain. And your brain is not the same.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean you can't heal and move forward.
Yeah.
But you think differently and you're wired a little bit differently. And
you didn't find anybody you could trust. You didn't find anything that would alleviate that pain and that stress and anxiety.
Well, I did. My sisters were very comforting, but they both lived out of town. And my niece, who's only 13 years younger than me, is very mm-hmm. comforting. But again, everybody lived out of town.
Yeah.
Mm. And my two closest friends, they were very kind. They were supportive of me, but they didn't know what to do with me.
Well, I appreciate so much your vulnerability, Leela. And that's Leela Sommerfeld. And we're also talking with Kathleen Terrell on today's Focus on the Family. And Kathleen, your story is different,
yeah.
but you went through a traumatic rape experience as well. Take us back to that time, what life was like before and during and after that event.
Absolutely. I was raised in a very loving Christian home. I had an amazing relationship with my parents and my sister and just kind of that all-American family environment. I was also attending a private Christian school, and the senior year of my high school, at the age of 17, 2 weeks before my 18th birthday, a group of friends and I were planning to go out for the night and just hang out together. For whatever reason that night, everyone decided to cancel except for this one other guy in the group. And this guy was new to our school. I knew of him. He kind of had that bad boy image that was very intriguing to the sheltered girl in me.
So you're a little attracted to that aspect of life.
Yes, it was intriguing. I wasn't necessarily attracted to him, but that persona was intriguing to me. So he invited me over. He said, well, why don't we just go to my parents' house and we can just watch a movie. Everybody else is canceled. So let's just, we're already out of the house. Let's go ahead and go hang out. So I agreed. We went over to his parents' house, and I believed his parents were home. I later found out they weren't.
Mm.
And as we began to watch the movie, we're sitting on the couch, and he began to make advances towards me, trying to kiss me. And honestly, I thought it was hysterical, like it was a joke, because it was the farthest thing that could be possible from my imagination for what he was trying to do.
He was probably not impressed by that response.
Not at all, I'm sure. I'm sure that probably hurt his ego a little.
Hmm.
And so I laughed and was, come on, what are you doing? We're not like that. We're just friends. And then we're going back to watching the movie and he tries again. And so a little more forcefully, I'm like, come on, knock it off. It's not like that. You know that. And then he tries a third time. And by this point, I'm getting angry.
Mm-hmm.
And so I shift in my seat and I began to stand up to leave. Like, I'm not going to tolerate this.
Mm-hmm.
And as I stood up, he then grabs me by the shoulders and forces me to the ground. And he forces me to the ground and pins me to the ground and then begins to tear and rip at my clothing to remove them. And I remember that moment so vividly, thinking, this cannot be happening. What is happening right now? My mind could not comprehend the events that were taking place. I don't remember driving home. I don't remember walking into my parents' house. But I remember going into my bathroom that night and just the shock and the horror as I used the restroom and just found myself covered in all this blood. And so I went to sleep that night. And I told myself, no one ever has to know. I'm never telling anyone.
Hmm.
This was such a shattering experience. It was so, to be that sheltered little girl and to have something like date rape, which that term in and of itself was foreign to me, it shattered everything that I knew to be true about the world I lived in.
And it's obvious as you go back to that time that the emotions are still churning and that the pain is still very, very real to you, Kathleen.
I do believe that the Lord has completely healed me of the pain. And God's grace has been profound in my life and how he's brought healing. For me, the emotions are still so strong because of my love for other girls and for other women who go through it.
You indicated, Kathleen, that you decided nobody ever had to know.
Right.
Why was that? The stigma, the shame, the embarrassment?
The shame was immediate. The shame was immediate, and it was palpable. The fear and the shame was completely overwhelming. And in that moment, my entire world had been rocked. Everything I knew to be true felt foreign suddenly. Mm. And that shame and that guilt felt almost like the only thing that seemed real. That shame and that guilt were so profound that I clung to those.
And this seems to be a very common reaction for victims of sexual assault.
Yes.
That a flood of emotions, guilt, et cetera, as you've just shared.
Absolutely.
And did that cloud of secrecy, that desire to keep all of that part of your life hidden, did that work for very long?
Well, in the coming weeks from my rape, I began to get sick. And as I got sick, it never occurred to me to take a pregnancy test. However, it was obvious that I had become pregnant via my rape.
And that certainly will expose the secret, won't it?
Yes.
Because everybody then is eventually going to find out.
Right. And so that's where that fear came from, that if I was to share that I had been raped and that now I'm pregnant at my private Christian school, that there would be disbelief, that no one would believe me, that I'm using perhaps rape as a cover-up story, and that that would be the cover-up story for the pregnancy.
And Leela, this is, again, this is all very common to assault victims.
It is so common. I have been leading my recovery classes for at least 15 years, and they all, if they'll write down what they want to be healed of, they'll write down shame. And it's just, I think part of that is because until now, and they're just coming out against sexual violence, and we have a lot going, organizations working to eliminate that. But the enemy says, first of all, the enemy says they won't believe you. They'll call you a bad girl. Well, why were you there? What were you wearing?
Why didn't you fight back? Those kinds of things.
Or why did you go there? And so we think maybe part of us, we are to blame. Maybe, maybe I should have been more careful or something like that.
Kathleen, did you experience those kinds of thoughts?
I knew that I was not to blame.
Okay.
However, there is this kind of twisting of thoughts that the enemy most decidedly tries to do. However, I knew very clearly that I had said no multiple occasions, that I had tried to leave, and I was physically restrained from being able to fight back. However, that's what rape is. It's not a sex crime. It is a violent crime, and it's all about power and control. And that's exactly what took place in my rape.
And going back then to the moment that you discovered you were pregnant, I'm sure your mind was racing.
Yes.
Did you decide at that point to start sharing what had happened?
No, I did not.
Okay.
So I continued to hide. I continued to withdraw. I pulled away from friends. I did what needed to be done in order to graduate and to finish out my senior year in high school, but I did not share the information with anyone. I literally lived with that secret throughout the continuation of that senior year in high school.
Okay.
It came to my graduation day, and I'm walking across the stage on graduation day, and the headmaster hands me my diploma and shakes my hand, and it was almost as if a light bulb went off in that moment. And I'm standing on the graduation platform with the diploma in hand, and it's like a light bulb went off. And suddenly I became acutely aware of, oh my gosh, I'm pregnant. And what am I going to do now?
I just got my diploma. I have a child. I'm going to have, oh my goodness.
So it was kind of like in that moment, I had gotten to the point where, okay, they can't kick me out of school now. And now I've got to face this thing. And my greatest fear, throughout this whole time was that no one would believe me. And as I'm sharing with my mother, who I loved more than anyone, she and I were so very close, she began to question me in almost an interrogation style line of questioning, just question after question after question. And as she's questioning me, it occurs to me that she's trying to find a hole in my story. And oh my gosh,
she does not believe me.
And that was crushing. That the one person I finally have confided in, the one person I love and respect and honor, does not believe me. And in that moment, my mother looked at me and she said, you are not going to place this child for adoption. You are going to have an abortion. And again, this is my mother, who is a godly woman. We were in the church, just an amazing Christian family. And to hear those words come out of her mouth, like my world was shattered. And the darkness I had been living in just grew immensely in that moment.
And was that then what you had to do?
Yes.
Is have an abortion?
So I was shattered, and I did not say no. And I remember that clinic so clearly, you know, showing, you know, you have a sonogram done, but yet at that point in time, the screen's turned away. I'm not able to look at the screen. Mm-hmm. There's no sound of the heartbeat. There's no evidence shown to me of the life that was growing inside. And so we go through with the procedure, and I remember the sound so clearly, and just feeling so absolutely alone. An interesting part to the story is there was a chair in that room, and I remember just needing something to focus my attention on and feeling so alone. And so I sat and, you know, as the procedure's going on, I'm staring at this chair in the room. Many years later, the Lord took me through an amazing ministry time of healing, and it's called Kairos in our church. It's an appointed time with God where you get to just come and experience his love wash over you. And I remember in that time, I said to the Lord, you know, I know your word is true. And your word says that you never leave us and that you never forsake us. And will you show me, God, where were you when I had that abortion? And he instantly gave me the most beautiful picture. And it was a picture of him, Jesus, sitting in that chair in the abortion room. Mm-hmm. And he was holding my hand. And his hand, one hand was on top of my hand and the other was underneath my hand. And he was stroking my hand, gazing into my eyes in the midst of this procedure taking place. And he spoke two words to me that forever wrecked me. He said, I understand. Now, was he saying the abortion was okay? Absolutely not. But he understood me, and he didn't run away. Mm-hmm. He understood my pain. He understood what was I was experiencing and showed me that he was there with me through it all.
Mm. Well, you two both have tremendous stories of pain, of difficulty. That's a beautiful illustration of God being there, although he probably didn't feel like he was there at the moment, did he?
No.
Back then.
Feeling very alone in the time.
How do you deal with the question? I mean, there are women listening right now who have gone through abortions,
yes.
and they don't have that kind of closure that you had, Kathleen, or... Leela, women who years later are still wondering, why didn't God stop that? How do you grapple with those questions?
Well, God doesn't stop everything. He doesn't stop everything. But he, like Kathleen said, he is there. And when people said to me, well, where was Jesus? I said, I can tell you where he was. He was standing in the doorway of my children's bedroom.
Protecting them.
So they would not hear or see anything. That's where he was.
Mm-hmm.
I truly believe now, you couldn't have convinced me of it way back then, but I believe now God does allow some things to happen in order for the healer to go on and become the healer. And people like Kathleen and I and hundreds of other women have gone on to have their ministry to reach out to women who are still in pain and have covered everything up and come to classes and seek healing and find Jesus at the heart of it.
And that concludes part one of our conversation with Leela Sommerfeld and Kathleen Terrell, both survivors of sexual assault. This is Focus on the Family with Focus President Jim Daly, and I'm John Fuller.
What an amazing conversation, John, and how thankful I am that Leela and Kathleen were so transparent in describing the trauma they experienced. Man, that is hard to do, but it will help, I hope, thousands. Thankfully, we won't end the story right here because, as we'll hear next time, God really did step into their lives in powerful ways, in ways that will give us all hope.
On behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team, thanks for listening. I'm John Fuller.
Those were two extremely difficult stories to hear. But it's so important for us to address this topic. even though it's hard to talk about. If we don't speak about rape, women and girls who've gone through this trauma may never find the help they need. If you listen today and you've experienced the violation of rape, we want you to know that help is available. Please don't hesitate to call our counseling department, where our trained therapists can talk with you and walk alongside you. The number is 031-716-3300, or you can reach us via our website at safamily.co.za by clicking the counseling link. Leila Sommerfeld's book, Beyond Our Control, shares her own story and offers a message of hope, along with a detailed guide to recovery after sexual assault. You'll find it online at safamily.co.za or by calling us on 031-716-3300 to order. I hope you can join us for the conclusion of our program tomorrow. I'm Alison Schnell for Focus on the Family Africa, inviting you back then, when we'll once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.